Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back. 3:06, second hour of the Mark Reardon Show. We do have a show tomorrow on Friday. We got a bunch of baseball interruptions for next week. Just keep that in mind. But we have a roundtable this Friday. This is pretty funny. I saw, hey, Klein, did you see Chris Myhill, our executive producer for the morning show? Every once in a while, you know, he comes up with something. He tweeted a story out from Reuters where there is the top doctor in Canada saying, wear a mask while having sex. Chris's response was, and I think this is actually pretty good, especially if it's not with your spouse, right?
That's, well, that's probably for sure, pretty good, just to, you know, yeah, protect your identity.
See this story, though. Haven't opened this up yet, so this is, skip kissing and consider wearing a mask when having sex to protect yourself from catching the coronavirus, Canada's chief medical officer said on Wednesday, adding that going solo remains the lowest risk sexual option in a pandemic. Go figure. Going solo would do that. So she's actually telling people to wear a mask. Skip kissing, avoid face-to-face closeness, wear a mask that covers your mouth and nose. This sounds like a blast, doesn't it? And monitor yourself and your partner for symptoms ahead of any sexual activity. I think you got to shoot the partner with the the thermometer.
Well, yeah, can you imagine that before you, hey, before we get started, let me take your temperature.
Well, not only that, before we get started, can you sign this consent form? You got to do that already.
Oh, right, true.
You got to sign a consent form. And then you probably got to sign a consent form saying you're not going to sue me if I have COVID. And then you're going to say, hey, you got to wear a mask. That is what you got to do. One other question before we get to our other segment here this afternoon. Did you ever watch the, what was that thing on Netflix? The Tiger King deal? Remember that?
Yeah, I never did. That was the big deal at the beginning of this pandemic. And everyone told me to watch it. I never did. Did you?
I watched one episode, but then my wife kept coming down, and she didn't want to see it, and, you know, Alexa was in the room, so I never finished it. But the reason I bring it up is because Carol Baskin, who was one of the women, you know, she was featured in that whole thing, she's actually going to be on Dancing with the Stars with Nelly. Nelly is going to be on Dancing with the Stars. So he goes from cardboard cutout in Cardboard Nation behind home plate to Dancing with the Stars. And Carol Baskin's on there as well. So there you go. I guess they're going to have a Dancing with the Stars. It's 3:08, and I was in Branson a couple of weeks ago, and as I was on a golf course, I think it was Branson Hills that I played, I get a message from an old friend of mine, an old dear friend from Springfield, Missouri, Joe Doss. And his father used to be a fan of mine, but then he got turned off, I think, years ago. He might be back. Does your dad still listen, Joe? I never know.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't. I think he hated me for a while. Okay. Well, for a while, I think he was mad at me, so he said, I'm not listening. Joe used to be a radio guy. He was a television guy in Springfield. You're not doing TV anymore, or are you?
Been out of that for about 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, I can never keep track, because you had the, for a while, it was rather unique, because it was you and your wife that was, you were anchoring, co-anchoring at the same time, right?
Yeah, we did the ABC in Springfield. In fact, I went to school to learn broadcasting at the Broadcast Center in St. Louis. Larry Connors was my first teacher.
Larry Connors was. It's funny, because if I remember, and this may be factually incorrect, but let's test it out. So Dan Shelley was a news director down there in Springfield at, what was the radio station? Legendary station.
KTTS.
Down there, right?
Yeah, KTTS.
Dan ended up going... Yeah, he. I didn't even know that all these years, but he ended up going to Milwaukee, and he hired me when I went to Milwaukee. But Joe and Dan and Scott Charton was a guy back in the day. We were all on, I think you were on the board of the Associated Press, and we would meet in Kansas City. We'd go to Royals games. We'd act like we were big, important news people. And and then you, if I remember, this is where the bio, this has been a long time, Joe Doss. I mean, we've been doing this for, what, 30 years? You ended up working for Bob Holden when he was treasurer, before he was governor. And then did you work with him when he was governor as well?
No. Don't blame that on me. So when I got a call to come back and be the co-anchor at the CBS in Springfield, I left Columbia Jeff City for the greener pastures of Springfield. So
yeah,
I'd like to pat myself on the back to help claim that I got Bob a little bit of the notoriety that he did when he was state treasurer.
I think you did. I had a great relationship with Bob. We'll blame Jane Duker on the one term there in the governor's office. All right, so this brings us to current time here. When you reached out, you were talking about, and actually this is timely because one of the fellow movie critics I have on the show, Christian Toto, who's out in the Denver area, he just tweeted yesterday that his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. I think we've all known people who have gone through this. We've had countless examples of lives that have been taken far too early for something that is in many situations treatable. So you are with an organization now called the Breast Cancer Foundation of the Ozarks, and I want you to give the background on that. You're kind of getting into the St. Louis area as well, right?
Well, that's the point, Mark, and that's why I reached out to you, because for 20 years now, BCFO, as we're known, the Breast Cancer Foundation of the Ozarks, has been helping families throughout southwest Missouri, and then we dip into northern Arkansas, northeast Oklahoma, southeast Kansas, and we also have an operation in central Florida between Orlando and Tampa that operates under our umbrella. And what we do is we help pay the non-medical living expenses of women and men who are in treatment for breast cancer. And in addition to that, because about 10 years ago, we determined that we should be helping on the front end as well. So we started funding free screening mammograms for women in our area. So if you're in our coverage area and or are treated in our coverage area, then you're eligible for those free screening mammograms. But this is your friend's not alone. I mean, this affects just about every family out there. It's statistically 1 in 8 women now that are impacted by breast cancer diagnosis in their lives. And most importantly, and probably the most alarming for me, 1 in 800 men. And most men never talk about this, and if they have it, they don't want to mention it. But what that means is most families that are listening right now statistically are related to somebody who has had breast cancer or will. But just in St. Louis County alone, Mark, statistically, that's 1,200 men. So, guys don't get tested for this. They don't think about it. They don't talk about it. So that's not my mission. My mission is to really get the word out and help people, all people. But our guys need to think about this.
If you were still on radio, I'd tell you to get on the mic a little bit more. I'm having a little trouble hearing you through the phone. But I wanted to ask about one aspect of this. You sent me an email. I thought this was interesting because you have this organization, Joe's the CEO, has the contracts to operate some DMV offices in southwest Missouri. How does that work with this organization?
Well, I'll speak up a little bit. Is this a little bit better?
it's a little better, yeah.
All right. I don't have a problem hearing you through the microphone, as you know. So this is not nothing of my doing, but about 10 years ago, this organization decided it would become a little bit more self-reliant and less reliant upon donors. So we went out as soon as the state allowed it and started bidding for the contracts. They're called fee agent contracts to run license offices. So we operate 5 DMV offices in southwest Missouri, and the money we raise from that those operations pays for all of the administration and then some of our organization. So we can say to people, every dollar you donate to BCFO will help a family that needs it.
So we're running short on time here because I got to go to Italy coming up next. I have Linda Garofano, who's been a great contributor here to the show, just talking about the pandemic, in Europe is coming up, and we're going to take that international call. But for folks, Joe, who want to get involved here, and I know you're working with Gateway to Hope, which is also an organization here in St. Louis, what would be the best way?
Thank you. And I do want to mention that briefly because we've reached out to Gateway to Hope. We have some similar service that we overlap a little bit, but we are talking right now about a new collaboration that's going to help us work together so we can help some of the underserved groups in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and throughout eastern Missouri. So we're online, bcfo.org. You can look us up on Facebook to Breast Cancer Foundation of the Ozarks. We are always looking for collaborations. Our mission is to help people, so anybody who wants to help us do that or who's been personally impacted by breast cancer, Mark, we're all ears.
Joe Dawes, appreciate you coming on here. Keep in touch. Happy to help out. Tell your dad I said hey, and hopefully they are still listening, and we'll chat soon.
Hey, shout out to the Duchenne Pioneers at my high school. Represent, and also some Dominic out in the O'Fallon. Got to do it.
I knew you were going to get that in there, Joe Dawes. I had a feeling. 316. Yeah, we go to Italy next with Linda Garofano, who's a tour guide over there. There's no tourism. How are they dealing with it? I think they got spiking numbers overseas. We'll find out next on KMOX.
Is any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Couple of things breaking right now. First and foremost, the Dow has hit 29,000 for the first time since February. 29,100, up 454 points. Dave Simons was with me on Monday. A large reason is because the Fed has, you know, sent a clear message they're not going to raise rates. But man, that is, I haven't looked at the 401k statement in 8-9 months now. And maybe I should. Also, Dexter Fowler has been placed on the injured list. I'm not even sure why. I didn't hear why. Dave, did you hear anything last night that might have happened?
No, I didn't.
With Dex? I didn't. Yeah, I did not. We'll have more on that. I believe Joe's going to join us a little later this afternoon. We have checked in with Linda Garofano a couple of times from Italy. She's a tour guide there. Has been great since the beginning of March, maybe the end of February, on updating us on what's been the situation in Italy. And now I see that there are maybe some spiking numbers. I thought it'd be a good time to check in with her again. Linda, how are you?
Thank you very much. I'm well. And you?
Well, we're doing okay. You know, kind of getting through the end of summer here in St. Louis. And just to kind of brief you on where we are in the middle of the country, we never got as bad as certainly the coast or Florida or Texas, but we still have restrictions. My daughter, who's 5 years old, is doing virtual kindergarten. We're still doing virtual schooling in many of the parts of St. Louis, but in the rest of Missouri, there are kids that are going to school in person. So it's kind of a mix here in the States and here in Missouri, kind of waiting to see what might happen in the fall. But what's the situation in Italy? I've seen a couple of stories in the past couple of weeks that indicate that the cases are starting to head upward again. Can you confirm or deny that from your perspective?
Yeah. No. They started to go up again. It's true that they were delivering way more tests than in the last few months. And, of course, this is also due to people that were allowed to go abroad and came back. And I have to say that there was a very silly decision of opening the clubs, and that probably was not the best decision to make. But let's say that the rates are still under control, and this is also indicated by the fact that there are way less people who die and way less people who need intensive care. So it's a total different situation than it was in March or April.
What are you allowed to do and get out in public and do right now? Are the restaurants open? Yeah. Is there dining allowed and things along those lines?
Yeah. All of that is back to normal. And as far as I am concerned, I'm in Rome right now. And since yesterday, also the public transportation allows 80% of capacity. Which was not the case up until now. So that indicates that the situation is getting back to normal. But, you know, we're in the middle of this huge confusion about what the situation will be once the schools are open. Here, the schools are going to open on the 14th of September, and that is a big question mark. We don't know exactly how it's going to happen and if it's going to be the same throughout the country.
Yeah, well, I mean, those are some of the same challenges that we've had here. I also heard that Pope Francis held his first regular papal audience in person in nearly 6 months in front of about 500 people. So that's a big step, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a big step. I was a little bit surprised about that. I honestly thought it would not happen, but it did happen. Of course, it was massive security, and they made sure that there was social distancing and everything. I have to say they handled it quite well. But life seems to have resumed to a normal lifestyle. But of course, there is great attention to be paid, especially in the big cities.
But you are all under mask ordinances as well, right, in public?
Yeah. We still have to wear a mask. And actually, a couple of weeks ago, they did make it compulsory again to wear masks when in public, especially if there are a lot of people. So when you go into restaurants and shops, so you have to have a mask, otherwise you're denied entrance. And right. As far as my building is concerned, we're not allowed to take the elevator all together unless it's family. So if it's two people at the elevator, you have to wait for the first one to go up and then you can take the elevator. So this kind of rules are still in place.
Linda, you are in the, and for those people who haven't heard Linda previously, we've talked with her several times from the beginning of this, even the beginning of March, and you're in the tourism industry. That is what you do. So
yeah.
What is the indication at this point when you might be able to get, because I know there's some allowance of U.S. travelers to Italy, but not much, and I don't even know how that applies to the rest of Europe. So are the rest of the European Union countries allowed to come to Italy to be tourists, or where does that stand right now?
Well, right now, my profession is totally destroyed by this by this pandemic. It is true that European Union travelers are allowed to come, and also UK travelers. I have to refer to UK as non-European anymore.
Yes, that's true.
But it is true. It is true that they are coming mostly for the summer holiday, which means that those who are having a benefit are the all the facilities by the beach. So in terms of tourism in the cities, museums and things like that, which is what I'm involved with, we don't see much of a movement. I mean, we see some Italian families coming along. It's true that I see this trend of people avoiding the big cities. So I have to say that Rome is still quite empty. I mean, if you compare it to last year, the same time, it's totally empty. So, no, we don't have forecasts. I really don't know what it's going to be like. I do count on a recovery around March. But let's be honest, it also depends on the U.S. Yeah. market, because the U.S. Is our major client, together with China and Japan. So it is all those clients have gone. So it was for anyone in my position, it's a difficult moment. Yeah.
So, you know, we don't, here in the States, you've dealt with a lot of Americans. We don't like to follow rules sometimes, do what we're told. And we've reached a boiling point in this country, Linda, not only because of the pandemic, but because of some race issues that I'm sure you followed from afar. But
yeah.
There's a lot of impatience. A lot of people are not in great moods. And mentally, it's been very tough. And I think that's going to continue. What's the, I know you can't generalize for the entire country, but Italians are known to be pretty fiery at times, too. Is there a boiling point with just frustration over being cooped up and things like that? Or do Europeans handle that much better than Americans?
I have to say that I do see this frustration rising a little bit. A lot of people are kind of considering the wearing masks a matter of private freedom, individual freedom, and they just don't like that. But if I have to say that has an impact on the way people follow rules, no, because in a way or another, they have to follow the rules. Otherwise, they can't really move anywhere.
Yeah, well, and that's part of the problem here, too. I think people are reluctant to follow the rules, but if you don't follow the rules, there's limited things you can do. I mean, I was in an airplane. Have you been on an airplane since all this started?
No, not yet. I have been on a train,
yeah.
But not on a plane.
I was on a plane a few weeks ago, and I wasn't sure if I would be able to sit there for 3.5 hours with a mask on. I'd never really done that, and, you know, you just kind of put your mind to it. I felt safe on the plane. You didn't have people on the middle seat, although the plane was relatively, you know, full beyond that. But, you know, that's still a tough thing to do, is just to figure out travel. Linda, it's great to have you on here. I like to check in every once in a while because we don't have the you know, the perspective where it used to be we would hear a lot about Europe and Italy at the early days of the pandemic. We just don't have that right now, mainly because of everything happening in this country. And we're in the middle of a presidential election as well, as you probably know. So
yeah.
We'll keep in touch. Stay safe. And thanks so much for coming on KMOX again this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And stay safe, you too.
Linda Garofano, who is a tour guide in Italy, joining us from Rome this evening. Certainly this evening in Italy. It's 3:29.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Yeah, audio cut of the day coming up. Nancy Pelosi is blaming the whole salon kerfuffle on a setup. So we'll look into that. Also, a little bit more information here from Derek Gould from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on Dexter Fowler being put on the IL. Derek Gould is reporting the Cardinals did that because he's taking medication that may compromise his immune system, and because of the COVID-19 precautions, they want to be careful. And it says he's going to be out for a couple of weeks, which is not good because he has been hitting the ball very, very well. How about the game last night? Two touchdowns and a safety as the Cardinals beat the Reds 16-2. Final game of that series tonight. So we've touched base with our buddy Ian Scheer from CNET many times over the course of the pandemic relating to some technology things that sort of come into play. And Apple and Google, this was the story that's been out here getting some attention, working together on some new COVID contact tracing. But whenever you have big tech involved in something like this, Ian Scheer, there's always privacy concerns. So first of all, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I hope you're doing well, too.
Yeah, pretty good. I actually got knocked down pretty bad a couple weeks ago. My listeners know this with what I thought was COVID, but it was not, but had a fever for 6 days and was sicker than I've probably been in decades. But lo and behold, it seemingly was. Yeah, it was weird, dude. It was another virus, but certainly certainly beat the you-know-what out of me. All right, so we know that governments, health authorities, they're looking for ways to find solutions to the pandemic to protect people. Some people are creeped out by a lot of this. You know, you got the Bill Gates conspiracies. You have people saying, well, when the vaccine is out, you're going to have it, or you won't be able to do this, or won't be able to do that. So what's going on with Apple and Google right now and this collaboration?
Yeah, Apple and Google are trying to come up with a solution for essentially before a vaccine comes out. And part of the problem we have is that, particularly in the United States, we really struggle with what's called contact tracing, right? That's when someone gets sick, you go through the really laborious process of figuring out everyone they came into contact with and then tell them, hey, you might have been exposed, you should quarantine, you should get tested, whatever. And it's something that has allowed, by the way, places like New Zealand to be able to reduce the number of infections they have by doing aggressive contact tracing. So Apple and Google said, okay, well, it's really hard to do in a country of 330 million, not to mention 7 billion around the world. So why don't we use the best sensors we have in the world, the phones in our pockets, to be able to do this for us? And the idea is to have an app that's running in the background all the time. You opt in, by the way. It's not automatically turned on. And what it'll do is that whenever you're near anyone for, let's say, 5 minutes or whatever, it'll exchange an anonymous ID with that person. And it's not trackable, nothing like that. But when one of those people gets sick, right, let's say they go along, within 14 days they get sick, their doctor enters in a little code into their phone, and suddenly you get a message saying, hey, you may have been exposed to coronavirus. You don't know who, you don't know when, but you should go get tested. And that is the idea of what they're doing. And now they're saying that they're going to make it a lot easier on governments to do this. Initially, they wanted governments to build apps and all that. And you know how stretched thin everyone is, regardless of what's going on right now, particularly during the coronavirus. So now they're just going to make it so that the governments don't have to really do anything. And you'll be able to turn it on. If you have an iPhone today, you can do it. Or if you've got an Android device, anything not an iPhone, you'll be able to do it by the end of the month.
So what? I'm slow, all right. And
it's okay.
I think I heard it correctly, but walk me through how it works again for people, because that's here as you describe that, and I get a text from someone that says that's blank and creepy. Some people are going to think it's creepy, but explain again how it works.
Yeah. So you opt in first off. You say I want to turn on this system, and whenever you're near anybody for more than like 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, your local authority sets it. Your phone will exchange an anonymous ID with another phone, right, with their phone. So now your two phones know about each other. There's no way to track it back to you, in theory. That's what Google and Apple say. And you go along. If one of you gets sick in the next 14 days and comes down with coronavirus, they get the test, and it's definitely that, the doctor can say, hey, are you part of this program? You say yes. They enter in a special code into your phone. Only the doctors have this code, so people don't just cause all sorts of trouble. And when they enter in that code, Apple or Google will send you a message saying, hey, someone you were near in the last 14 days got sick. You should either get yourself tested or quarantine yourself.
I'm just trying to think of further uses for this. If we, we
God,
it is a little creepy. Yeah.
It
is. Well, so it's a little creepy.
Well, and that's part of why Apple and Google, first off, has said this is opt-in. It's not on by default, right? Because they realize it is a hard sell if they're going to make it by default, right? Not cool at all. So you have to join. But secondarily, they have promised, and you can believe this or not, that's up to you, they have said that they are going to turn off the system when the coronavirus concerns start going away. So they've said this is a one-time deal. They've built it specifically to help people with this one thing. They've actually shared all of the code of how it works with the public. So if you know how to code, you can actually go to their websites and learn it. And, you know, they want to make it as transparent as possible, partially because people like you and me, the first thing we all think is, my God, these are two of the most powerful companies in the world. How can we trust them? And that's a tough thing for them. They have to get over that. But part of the way they do that is to be very, very transparent about how it works.
I love that line, if you know how to code. Yeah, if I knew how to code, I wouldn't be sitting here on the radio right now, I'll tell you that. Would have done a lot better.
Not debating that, but I'm jealous
for that. Yeah, exactly. Well, it is interesting. You know, I guess the success of the program, and I don't know what Google and Apple have said, I like aspects that, you know, remove the burden on the states and the, you know, maybe even the federal government, because then you can have these tech companies, they have the resources to get it moving faster. They've been working on this for, you know, I think since the spring when all this started. But yeah. I guess the question would be, can you trust them? And then the other question is, how effective might it be if enough people don't opt in? You have to have people opting in. And if that doesn't happen, I don't know if it really works.
I've had the luck to be able to ask them several questions throughout this whole process. And Apple and Google, to their credit, have had a number of times where they've brought the press together on a phone call and allowed us to pelt them with questions over this. And that's not always how the tech industry works, so I have to give them credit. And one of the questions that constantly comes up as we're going through this is, well, what is the minimum number of people you need to have join in for this to work at all? And the problem, honestly, we don't know. Because no one's ever done something like this before, right? I mean, the last time we had a pandemic of this scale was in 1918 when computers were, like, barely even a thing. So part of the problem we have here is we don't know whether this is going to work. We don't know how many people need to join in to make it work. Apple actually helped to fund a study where they say potentially, if you believe the math and all that stuff and, you know, game theory and all this stuff about how people work, that 20% of the population in any given area, if they join in, then the system will be successful. I honestly don't know. What I'm hoping is that it saves one life. If that does enough, then I'm happy. But I honestly don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. By the way, you mentioned 1918, and I haven't spent a ton of time on this, but I'm not really good at reading books. I should be. I read so much other stuff, though. I use that as an excuse to not read books. But The Great Influenza by John Barry, who I believe is a professor still in Tulsa, it's just amazing how many parallels there are to what happened in 1918 to today. And the lessons that we're not learning, you know, there are a lot of lessons in that book, things that were made, mistakes that were made that didn't have to be repeated. But, oh, you know, we're repeating them all. We're good at that. We like to repeat mistakes in this country. But
one
it
of
is
my
an
favorite,
book.
When I, you know, I was a history major in undergrad, and one of the favorite cartoons one of my professors had said, those who learn history or those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it, and those who do learn history are doomed to stand by and watch as people repeat it.
Yes, that is a great line. I love that. When you were majoring in that, I was majoring in going to the bars, I think, my undergrad work at Mizzou. It's 3:45. Ian, I know you got another interview this afternoon. Always great to have you on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Always great to chat.
We will chat soon. You know, the thing about this is, and I know I already got a text, my friend Chris, the start of barcoding. I watched the movies. Yeah, people think there's going to be tattoos and there's going to be this and there's going to be that. And I don't know what's coming. I'm not going to make predictions because that's very dangerous. But it's going to be complicated. And it's going to be complicated in the sense that if there are requirements made for vaccines, for travel or other things, I think it's perfectly reasonable. And I've said this in the last couple of weeks, and this is where it gets tough. It is. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I think the anti-vaxxers are kooky. Okay, that's just me. If you're an anti-vaxxer, you can disagree with me, but I think you're kooky, all right? That's just me. I think a lot of other people think that too. However, the vaccine comes out. Well, we had the case of the kid that took the vaccine, the trial, and it's not very well tested, and it's rushed to market, and we don't really know what the effects are going to be overall. There's no way to know what, you know, 1 year, 18 months down the line will be because it's rushed. There are a lot of rational, sane, non-kooky people that are going to sit back and say, I'm not ready for this. You know, I don't think it's the safe thing to do. I have the antibodies or whatever the situation be. And that's not unreasonable. But I think the fear is that those people will be lumped in with the with what I would refer to as the kooky anti-vaxxers. And that's not fair because you can't have these. And again, we're kind of jumping to conclusions here on barcoding and tattoos and whatever else might be implanted in your body. But this is going to get a little tricky moving forward. There's no doubt about that. We have an audio cut of the day in traffic coming up next.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Oh, this is a good one. The audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. This is another one of those exhibits of media bias as well, because wait and see how this is treated in the New York Times or CNN or elsewhere. So we found out that Nancy Pelosi called in a special favor, went to a salon in San Francisco. This salon is not allowed to be open right now. They have restrictions. They can be open just September 1st for outdoor hairstyling services only. Nancy Pelosi sends a stylist a text on Sunday saying, hey, I need my hair done. I need my hair did. And she gets the blowout. She goes in there. There's no doubt it's her because we got video of it. And the owner of the salon reveals this to Fox News saying, look, this is a double standard. She calls in a favor. We can't even be open. My stylist can't work. You'd think that Nancy Pelosi, because let me tell you something, if a Republican did this, if any Republican did this, they would be hammered. They'd be on CNN for 3 hours talking about it, probably more than that, straight. Nancy Pelosi won't even apologize. She blames it on a setup. Here's your audio cut of the day.
I take responsibility for trusting the word of a neighborhood salon that I've been to over the years many times, and that when they said, well, we're able to accommodate people one person at a time, and that we can set up that time, I trusted that. As it turns out, it was a setup. So I take responsibility for falling for a setup. And that's all I'm going to say.
You know what? I don't even care if it was a setup. It wasn't a setup. She knows what the rules are. She called in a favor. She got caught, and she wants to say it's a setup. Good for the owner of the salon and anyone else who wants to set up Nancy Pelosi for being as hypocritical as she is, keeping businesses, her and her buddy Gavin Newsom, keeping businesses from opening up and actually making money and surviving and paying their bills. But she gets to go in and call a special favor and then blame the business. That's great, Nancy Pelosi. But she'll get a pass from the media. I promise you that. 3:56. Total Information PM is coming up.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.